You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessory store in Arizona. Homestyle Gallery saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
Oh, yes, I've come to feel very close to the birds, and I've come to realize how they feel when...
Wow, what a beautiful day for a drive. Come on, sweetie bird, you're going with me. Where are all those birds coming from?
Lady, you gotta get out of here!
Look at the poor fat man! They've patched his eyes out!
Never mind that, that's just Hitchcock. He makes a cameo in all his commercials. You gotta roll the windows up! Get your windows up!
The power windows don't work!
Lady, I know we don't have time to discuss this, but you should have taken your car to Perfection Auto Works. They do windows!
You heard right. At Perfection Auto Works, we do windows. Power windows, that is. Our free 26-point inspection will have you covered. At Perfection Auto Works, we won't give you the bird. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you, and welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum, the most talked to, talked about, listened to talk show weekends in all of Arizona. Thank you for making that possible now in our 32nd year of continuous political talk in Tucson. Thanks for being here. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Today, Ed Ackerley of the Tucson Business Owners, Inc. talks about money from the food bank to fund the petition drive for the $15 minimum wage issue that's on your ballot come November the 2nd in the city election. How in the hell can you justify the food bank coming up with $50,000 to fund the petition effort? Did the food money from small children fund this effort? Well, we'll talk with Ed Ackerley. Sam Stone is also scheduled, GOP consultant. We'll talk about how far down the rabbit hole our President Biden and his administration might be. Jim Hanley has our financial report. Fed's going to cut off the flow of money. What does that mean to the economy? It's a great show, and we're glad you're with us. Here's Ed Ackerley. Hi, Ed.
Hi, John. How are you?
All right. The whole idea of, I guess the number is $50,000 check written out by the food bank to fund the petition effort to put on the ballot the $15 an hour minimum wage mandate for the city of Tucson to be decided by voters in our town. How in the hell can the food bank justify that kind of expenditure? You talked to Michael McDonald, CEO of the food bank. What did he say?
Well, I think that they have been for years been advocating for underserved populations. And of course, I knew Punch Woods. He was the director for many years and worked with him. And Punch was always a person that wanted to help people that were, food depraved and wanted to help them in other areas of their life. And so this is a general course, I think, that the food bank has taken to be on the side of people that are economically disadvantaged and need some help. So I don't say that this is new, but I think what is new is the amount of money that has been given to this campaign and the fact that the food bank was the first one out to step out front. I was looking at the website of looking at all the organizations. Obviously, there isn't a business listed on the donor list. It's all organizations and unions and nonprofits that have stepped forward to support this, along with, I was looking at the list of politicians as well, and I'm unless I'm mistaken, I don't see any politicians on there that own a business and sign the front of a check. They're all either lifetime politicians or that they're people who work in government in other areas and have run for an office. And so what has happened here is the food bank has made a $50,000 contribution to the Fight for 15 in the guise of trying to help the underserved population. And although I understand what their mission is and what they're trying to do, wrong time, wrong place, wrong donation, it was just wrong.
Well, it is wrong. And the idea that if I give money to the food bank and there's bulk money available to buy food by bulk, which goes much further than just, say, my tin can of right. baked beans. And I've given money, by the way, to the food bank over many, many years. And the whole idea of the thing is, I didn't know it was going to go to their political efforts.
Right.
And I might be opposed to their political efforts. I might even support the political efforts, but it's not to be channeled through those baked beans and the effort of bulk food for children. I mean, the appeal of the food bank is to get food to give hungry people. I understand that. And some of that is purchased in trailers all over the country that are not, you know, cornflakes, whatever. But the idea is you'd take that money and you'd fund a political effort that might not be in my best interest would make me think maybe I should not give to the food bank. And I know you have some members of your organization saying, I'm not going to help them anymore.
Well, you know, this is also a slippery slope. If you fund the $15 minimum wage initiative, what initiative comes next that you sponsor with this kind of money? And to say, well, no, we're just doing it for this one because this one is the most important one. You know, I don't buy that argument. I buy that if you're a nonprofit and you're being served by the community to serve the community, that you have to be conscious of all the community that is donating to your organization. So we do have members who have come to me and said, that's it. No more. I will never again, for as long as I live, donate to the community food bank. I understand that perspective. Some of these restaurants that have, many years ago when they could give food to the food bank and Second Harvest and so forth, where they could actually use the food, you can't do that much anymore. But what you can do is you can give money. And these restaurants and other organizations that have given money for 40 years to the food bank are now being subject to a political decision made by their board of directors and their executive director, which is wrong, and they need to know that. So that's why I called the executive director to express my concern, ask the question, and say, what do we do about this?
What do we do about this?
Well, I think we call them out. I think we as business people and people in the community. Here's one of the concerns I have about the about this is that they consulted with themselves on the board of directors, and granted, I know that a few of the people on the board are obviously representing companies that have long supported the efforts of the food bank. But in my checking of all the people that I know that are in my organization and in other organizations that are involved in this fight, they weren't consulted about, if we go ahead and give them $50,000, what do you think about it? It was a board decision and an executive decision that is, I guess, a long time in coming. Those people that have been giving to the food bank over these many years were never consulted, and it was a policy decision driven by the board that was enacted by the administration. And you know, it's wrong because you're basically discounting a large group of people who give lots of time, effort, and money to the food bank. You're now saying that they're viewpoint doesn't matter.
Well, I will tell you that about a year and a half ago, I was the marketing director for the Urban League, raising money from all over the place for a whole program of efforts to try to keep the Urban League solvent. It was a failing effort. It is insolvent. But I know for a fact that the food bank wrote out a huge check to the tune of $30,000 plus to the Urban League and never got the money back. How many more checks have they written? I mean, if they wrote $50,000 for this effort and $35,000 for the Urban League, how many more checks do they write? You've got an $11 million budget for the food bank. Is over $1 million being handed out to other efforts beyond buying food? I don't know, but we ought to find out, and it ought to be public record.
I do agree with that. I think that when the community is giving to an organization like the food bank, specifically one that is so basic to the sustenance of our community members, and people are donating money to it, it does seem to me rather odd that they would get involved in a political fight that on the outside seems like it's discounting a whole group of people who for many years have been supporting them. So in the end, I don't know the answer to the question, although I did my homework on this. I don't know the answer to the question, and that's a good question that you pose. How do we find out what the food bank has given in other areas and other political causes? But if you look at the website, they're the leading donor here. And I don't begrudge anyone the opportunity to participate in the political arena and be involved in our community. Matter of fact, I encourage it. What is wrong here is that people that have donated money to the cause are now being subject to being it's against them. It's against their perspective and what they think, and it's not sitting well with them.
Well, another thing too is I go back to the Urban League dollars that was given to them. That money was given to the Urban League at a time when the Urban League was just hanging on by a thread. As you know, they've sold their property on 36th, and they have abandoned the building on Grant Road. They no longer exist. The county has much picked up some of the responsibilities of the Urban League. And, of course, the Urban League had a long, long history of helping people. And I know a large check was given to the Urban League from the food bank. And I don't know how many other big checks. I mean, is this a Midas guy playing money games? I'm not talking about Mike. I'm talking about Michael McDonald, who just hands out money to people who ask for it when he thinks it's a good cause, because that's not written in the agreement, which I don't have, when I give money to the food bank. There's no disclaimer.
Right.
I'm saying, by the way, this money doesn't all go for food. It goes for whatever Michael McDonald wants to spend it on. And that may be an issue that I would agree with or may not be.
Yeah, I did ask Michael. I said, Michael, I know what you're trying to do here to try to help lift the economic woes of people that think that they need more money for a sustainable living. But I said, Michael, how many people can you feed for $50,000? If you'd have taken that money and turned it into food and say that, his response was, well, it probably could have solved a lot, but we've got an $11 million budget and we've got plenty of food and we've served more people over the last year than we ever have before because of COVID and people losing their jobs and other things. Well, that's great, but that still doesn't give you the right to take the $50,000
yeah.
and donate it to a political cause like this, especially one that's so divisive in the business community.
Well, I want to talk about this issue that's on the ballot come November 2nd as voters in Tucson go to the polls to decide about the $15 minimum wage. That's not the whole issue, the $15.
Right.
There is a whole bunch of hidden policies. The devil's in the details, and that's never been more true than in this particular issue. I'm going to take a quick break. If you come back with the details
and
of
I
that
do,
proposition.
I do want to give listeners how they can still continue to give to the food bank but what they could do in the meantime.
All right, we'll do that. We'll be back with Ed Ackerley of the Tucson Business Association, Tucson Business Owners Association. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Hi, my name is Jim Hanley. I was born and raised in Tucson, and I raised my own boys here. I want to get to know you, your dreams and goals, and help you shape them into a plan for success. I've been helping hundreds of Tucson families do this since 1993. It takes experience and know-how to navigate the rocky shoals of the financial markets and keep you on an even keel. I look at every account I manage every day to find opportunities to grow your nest egg, to make you at ease and enjoying your life. I want to show you the highest integrity and reliability you can find anywhere. That's why I named my business with my own name, Jim Hanley LLC, and why I'm a member of the CFA Society of Tucson. Find me at jimhanleyllc.com or call me at 623-3646. That's 623-3646. Jim Hanley LLC is a registered investment advisor and a member of FINRA SIPC.
Together, they brought a bit of France to the heart of Tucson. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery at Prince and Campbell have become a gathering place for Tucsonans who love great bread and wonderful food. The bread and the pastries of La Baguette Bakery have become a Tucson favorite, and Guigny's French Cafe offers casual atmosphere, delightful French cuisine, and moderate prices. Dine in or dine out, Guigny's is just perfect for breakfast and lunch, offering specialty coffees, lattes, French wines, cocktails, imported beer, and a touch of France. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery in the Safeway Center at Prince and Campbell have now become Tucson's destination to dine in or to take out.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum, talking with Ed Ackley of the Tucson Business Owners, Inc., which is a pro-business political organization in our town, funded and joined by a great many business owners who are upset from time to time about the politics that affect their business. And one of the things that they're upset about is the food bank gave $50,000 of money that was donated for food, but the $50,000 went to fund the petition effort to put on the ballot the $15 an hour minimum wage issue on the November 2nd ballot in Tucson, Arizona. And there's no question that it's not just about the $15. That's not what, as we mentioned, the devil's in the details. Tell me about the details.
The devil's in the details. I did want to say something about the food bank. You know, I realize that people are very upset and don't want to give to the food bank anymore. What I've suggested to our members and to people that talk to me about this is that go ahead and write a check. Maybe you take a little bit off of it, but write a check. The people that need the food. And if your money, but write a check and write a note in with that check that says, I don't want this money to go to a political campaign. I want it to go to feed people, and send that along with the check. And if enough people send along those checks with that message, maybe Michael and the board will get the note that we don't want them, the business people don't necessarily want them involved in politics. I mean, I've got a couple of initiatives coming up here that I think would be beneficial to the food bank and to them getting more donations and more money to operate their thing. Are they going to come and make donation to my political campaign and to my political activities and so forth? And the answer is no, but I don't think that they should probably be doing it to one side or the other. So I just wanted to mention that they do good work, and God bless them for what they've done for starving people.
But what they did was wrong.
But what they did was, yes, it needs to be called out.
Right.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk
about the devil is in the details on this. You know, if the writers of this particular initiative would have stopped at the first couple of sentences, I think that we probably could have had some agreement on this, because the state of Arizona already has a $15 minimum wage in place. It's going to happen. It'll be happening basically the same amount of time as this initiative that's been written calls for it. So the city of Tucson will be following state law when when everybody in the state makes it to a $15 minimum wage. And there's already businesses that are starting at $14.50, $15. I have some clients that are starting, trying to get workers to work for them who won't come back to the workforce. They're already paying $15, $16, $17, $18, $20 an hour trying to get people to work for them. The details are that after they say, let's pay $15 an hour, which is going to happen with or without this initiative, is there's our five or six pages of stuff that is just untenable for businesses. I think the biggest one that stands out is the fact that this stands up a new enforcement agency that the city of Tucson is going to have to put together, a labor standards board, which could start at a minimum of $500,000 to stand it up, hire new investigators, and get people to go out and investigate whether or not a company is paying the $15. And that starts it, and then it goes from bad to worse. They pay people to snitch on their neighbor, if you will, if it's a disgruntled employee, a contract worker, even a competitor, or just a citizen that suspects that somebody is not paying $15. They can call this enforcement board, and the enforcement people have to go out and investigate it. So it's kind of like the wall of shame that the county had for people that weren't to following the mask mandates and allowing people to call in anonymously to report this. This is not how government should be enforcing and doing it. This should be going through the normal practices of the organizations that we already have in place, not coming up with this new Gestapo police force that they're going to have.
Well, let alone the costs involved too.
Well, we can't get the roads and the police right. So now we're going to tell them to go do enforcement for labor standards. Okay, I'm not there with that. I don't think that's right. I think that they should stick to the charter, and they should do police safety, roads, parks, a little bit of libraries, some housing, and do that. Let's get that right first.
Well, you know, we've got a murder rate that's almost doubled where it was before.
We're going to be over 100 before too long.
Yeah, and it was 50 last year. We have a situation where people are getting run over on a regular basis.
Right.
You know, we know we have an undercomplement of police officers, that we need to fill those jobs, and we can't seemingly do that for one reason or another. And we need to do that.
Right.
I was a victim of a home invasion. I've talked about this on the air. Somebody smashing through the front door of my home at 5 in the morning, knocking me down and threatening my dog and my life, and waiting 15 minutes for a cop to come and finally arrest him. In fact, Laura Conover, our county attorney, has notified me he's eventually, this guy that broke into the homes in my neighborhood and into my home, will be sentenced. God knows how that'll go. Maybe they'll give him a reward or some. Who knows? Yeah. Anyway, that's just another story. But, you know, as a victim of crime, I understand why we have to have a police officer. I wanted a police officer in front of my house in 5 minutes, not 15 minutes, after my home was invaded. Right. A 90-year-old woman next door smashed through the window of her home, and this guy winds up in her bedroom scaring the hell out of her. You know, she was terrified of what was happening at 5 in the morning in the townhouse next to mine, as well as the numerous homes that were broken into in that incredible morning of early December last year. Anyway, that's my story with police, and we have to be able to protect and serve.
Right.
We are not able to do that with a number of police officers. We're almost out of time. If people want to know more about your organization, quickly tell them within 15 seconds.
Well, you can go to knowon206.org and find out all the information about the initiative. And if you want to join our organization, it's TucsonBusinessOwners.org.
Very good. Thank you, Ed Ackerley.
Thank you, John.
$50,000 check from the food bank to fund the petition effort for the $15 an hour minimum wage that some people don't want, but are obviously, if they give money to the food bank, paying for that effort. Unbelievable and wrong.
They've landed! They're here! They're here!
This is WHOR Television, and we're live. I cannot believe what I see. The ship has landed. It is beyond words. Oh, wait, the door is opening. There's a creature coming out, walking down the steps. He is speaking with the representative. Let's listen. It's so quiet, you can hear a pin drop.
Take us to your leader.
To be quite honest, you came at a really bad time.
Yes, timing is everything. And it's always a good time to have your car serviced at Perfection Auto Works, the leader in car repair, for over a quarter of a century. From our free 26-point inspection, we'll keep your car moving, along with the Earth's rotation, 323-8650, and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. I used to work for WHOR, except I was the horror. What the heck. Pelosi shifts infrastructure bill deadline to October 31st amid Biden frustration. That's our headline. Sam Stone's a GOP consultant. He is a former aide to Saul DiCicco, a conservative Republican city councilman. He is considering a run for the city council of Phoenix himself. He's one of the more brilliant political experts that I know, and that's why I enjoy talking with him. Sam, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it. Thanks for giving us part of your weekend.
My pleasure.
All right, let me ask you here, how far down the rabbit hole is Biden and this administration?
They are hugely far down the rabbit hole. I don't know if you saw Kyrsten Sinema's statement that she put out a few hours ago on it. But
I didn't. What does it say?
She ripped them. I mean, she says, quote, "Good faith negotiations, however, require trust. Over the course of this year, Democratic leaders have made conflicting promises that could not all be kept, and have at times pretended that differences of opinion within our party did not exist, even when those disagreements were repeatedly made clearly, directly, and publicly."
Whoa.
"Canceling the infrastructure vote further erodes that trust. More importantly, it betrays the trust of the American people have placed in their elected leaders and denies our country crucial investments to expand economic opportunities. That's the final of four, five paragraphs. She lights it up.
Wow. All right. By the way, how much trouble is she in, for that matter?
None.
Really?
Absolutely none.
Her base in Arizona is not threatened by these actions against the Biden administration at all? She's not weakened at all?
She's probably weaker. If you look at the numbers, she's weaker with Democrats than some other U.S. senators are on the Democrat side, but she's a plus 27 with them in terms of favorability.
Wow.
She's positive in terms of favorability with Republicans. She's massively positive in terms of favorability with independents. Not only is this not going to get her in trouble, all these people that are saying, oh, this is going to get a primary and she's going to lose, you are out of your mind.
That's not going to happen, right?
No, it's not even going to come close to happening. This woman has a ticket back to D.C. in her next election without question.
But that's 4 years away. And anything could happen. We know that.
No, absolutely. Yeah, you're right, John. I think anything could happen. And one of the things that I fully expect to happen is I don't think Biden will run again. And I think she has presidential ambitions and she'll be a monster.
Whoa. Really? No.
Absolutely.
Holy cow. Wow. Yeah. Amazing. I never saw that one coming at all. But do you really believe that?
I've heard that from some folks who have some ties to her. So.
Whoa. Let's talk a little bit about where Biden can go now, though. I mean, he's going to get a bigger, better, through. Is there anything going to go through? I mean, if he doesn't get this done at all, period. He's it's over, don't you think? I mean, and it's he hadn't even finished his first year, but it may be the end of not only the beginning but the end of the end for them.
Yeah, look, when you add up everything that's going on right now, Biden came in, promised we're going to get COVID under control. That was never a realistic promise, but a lot of people took him at his word. The border thing. He basically came in and just said, I'm going to do everything the opposite of what Trump did, ignoring the fact that I and a lot of other people were wrong. And actually, Trump ended up being right about a lot of this stuff on the border and had made real strides in improving the situation. That's a disaster. If he can't get this, boy, you're right. It looks bad for 2022. And if you're the American people, the chance that he's reelected is dropping by the day.
As to things they can accomplish, though, what do you foresee coming out of this in almost unbelievable exercise that we are watching almost on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour basis until something gets done, unless nothing gets done? What do you expect?
Well, I don't know, because at this point, the Democrats can't agree. I think Sinema hit on it perfectly in her statement. Is they have very clear disagreements on their side. They have a razor-thin majority. The only way to get anything done, you have one of two ways. You either have to be strongly bipartisan, which nobody seems to want anymore, even though that would be by far the best thing for the country, or you have to have 100% of your party in line. At no point have they done that. The only thing they have agreement on is this infrastructure bill. And if they would allow that to go by itself and not tie it to these broader negotiations, you could get that done and it would be a win.
Let's talk a little bit about Arizona turning blue. You are in a city council ward. I guess you call it a ward up there. I'm not sure what you call it. That's what we call
district,
it now.
District, but yeah.
And it was pretty red under Saul DeCicco, who you worked for. Now you are running. It's not as red as it was, and I think people are facing that as far as Republicans go all across the state in legislative races, city council races, and such, of the turning of the blue of Arizona. I don't know how far that's going to go or how fast it's going to go, but it is happening, and you can't ignore it as a Republican.
Well, it's certainly happening, and in my case, it's happening in more than most, because Ahwatukee was one of the reddest areas of Phoenix, and now it's probably light blue. And a lot of that has to do with proximity to ASU and the new biotech corridor there. But at the end of the day, first, I think part of this narrative is overblown. I mean, part of what you had was a lot of suburban women who have traditionally voted Republican here who just could not pull the trigger for Donald Trump, and that really affected the last election. But at the same time, you look down ballot, Republicans still did very well, still maintained control. I think that'll be the case this time. Redistricting, frankly, is going to be as big a deal as anything.
We don't know how that's going to turn out either. Is there a leaning that you recognize from the Republicans or even independents or Democrats in that, or do we know yet? We don't really know, do we?
We don't really know. I always sort of keep my ear to the ground to see who starts complaining first, because that usually gives you an indication of which way it's going. But, you know, thus far, you're really not hearing anything about it. Which is good. I mean, frankly, if they come up with just a straight up, let's make this as apolitical as possible and as reasonable and fair as possible, great.
What are the chances Republicans picking up some congressional seats here next year? I don't see it happening in Congressional 2, even though Randy Freese was very strong as a trauma surgeon pulling out. That was surprising. There's a real shuffle there as Randy Freese says, I'm not even going to go back to the legislature. The English who's taking over that particular, I think, insider track for the Democratic nomination, because English apparently is not going to go back to the legislature, so you got a couple of vacancies before we even get into another session. But it just seems to me that Republicans may have a situation to pick up at least one or two of these Democratic-held congressional seats in the state. Do you see that?
I do, although, again, I think that a lot of that has to do with redistricting, right? I think potentially you could have Greg Stanton's seat become more competitive.
Right.
That District 2 seat could potentially swing. I really think it's tough. Since the Navajo elections were aligned, I think it's very, very tough. But I think it's possible. Again, although I don't see a lot of that here, I think Republicans will do better in the U.S. Congress in other states than they do here. So I do expect Congress to swing, but maybe not Arizona.
Sam Stone, great to give part of your weekend to us, and I really appreciate you being on the show. Good luck in your campaign. I need a one-minute summary of how you elect a city councilperson in Phoenix, because it's bizarre. What, do you have to have 50% of some vote in the primary? I don't get it. How do you get on the council, for God's sake?
We have a district-only election, and then you have a primary election, if you will. We call it a jungle primary in November of 2022. So when everyone else is in their general election, we're in our primary. However, if you get 50% plus one vote, anyone gets 50% plus one vote, it's over right there. If they don't, the top two finishers go to a March runoff.
Good Lord. That puts a campaign of almost seven, 8 months of effort. Unbelievable.
Well, and we had people who announced, I think, April of this year.
Lord, yeah.
So it's like a 23-month campaign. I just laughed. I said, that's electoral punishment.
That absolutely is. Absolutely. I can't even imagine anybody pounding the pavement for that length of time. Sam Stone,
well,
thanks.
Who the heck wants to care about your city council for 24 months?
Nobody. Nobody. Nobody in this world. No matter whether they pick up your garbage or not. I appreciate it, Sam. Have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us. Talk to you soon.
You too.
All right, thank you. Sam Stone, GOP consultant and now candidate for City Council of Phoenix. We'll be back in just a moment with Jim Hanley. He is our financial expert. One of the smartest financial people I know. How disturbed and perturbed is he about the whole Congress and the debt ceiling and now the entire economy that is teetering on the brink of what? Collapse? We'll find out from Jim Hanley after these messages.
Do you want election integrity and transparency? Are you one of those Americans who is sick and tired of the political duopoly? Do you wish there were another viable choice? Do you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours? Do you question the political theater you're fed every day? What do you believe, the approved narrative or your own eyes?
Are you ready to become engaged for freedom no matter your political party preference? Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Are you tired of being lumped into the worst elements of history when you exercise your right to speak, dissent, or petition your government? Are you perplexed by those who cannot distinguish between speech and violence? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
As a business owner, you're responsible for the growth, leadership, and the daily operation of your business. This includes your interaction and advocacy for your customers. Tucson Business Owners, Inc. offers you the opportunity to educate and advocate about community policies affecting profitability. By becoming a member of Tucson Business Owners, Inc., you can have an effect on common issues, such as curb appeal, municipal budget priorities, and keeping a vibrant workforce in the area. For more information, visit TucsonBusinessOwners.org. Radio advertising busts through clutter and reaches your customers with immediacy.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Tell a creative story with intimacy and emotion to sell your products and services directly to your customer.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Your radio commercial puts you front and center in the listener's attention span.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Ackerly Advertising has over 5 decades of radio advertising experience. Stir emotion, create demand, and grow your business with radio.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. With us, Jim Hanley, our financial expert, one of the smartest financial people I know. And Jim, welcome to the show. We're talking about where we're going now financially. The Fed's going to stop throwing money around, and that's going to be a problem. And we don't know about the debt ceiling. That's going to be a problem. We don't know about the Biden plans to pump some infrastructure dollars into a badly needed and crumbling infrastructure. So where are we and where are we going, Jim?
Boy, John, it's kind of being on a tilt-a-whirl. It's you lose your balance and get disoriented. Things are happening so fast. It's great to be your guest again today. I appreciate it. And, well, the latest developments were that the House passed an emergency funding bill on Thursday. I think it was ratified by the Senate. At any rate, the Congress passed it and passed it up to President Biden, who signed it on Thursday night. So the government will be funded through December 3rd. And the financial markets kind of rebounded, took a sigh of relief on Friday, after kind of a week of quite a bit of turmoil. So that was good to see that. And it also helped the quarter up and keep the calendar quarter from going into too bad in red for the quarter. So for the week, the Dow closed up 482 points on Friday. That was 1.43%. The NASDAQ was up 118 points, 0.82. Let's look at the quarter. The Dow was down 659 points for the quarter. That's just a little less than 2%. And the NASDAQ was down 1.47% for the quarter. So getting back to the Washington turmoil, I am so happy that that group they call the Squad, which, you know, is led by Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez and supported by perennial what's his name, who was the president, the candidate for president. Anyway, the Squad prevailed on Friday and said, no, Nancy, we are not going to vote on the infrastructure plan that Senator Sinema redubbed the bipartisan infrastructure plan. We're not voting on that until we get a vote on the reconciliation bill, which is, you know, the big one. It's $3.5 trillion that will really truly transform our country and our society. So they're holding out. They're forcing Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema to come and negotiate.
So far, they just hold out and say, we don't like it. Manchin disingenuously says, oh, well, it's just too big, you know, and I think that he even said something about the welfare state. So that continues to play out. I think that we're going to see some give on the part of those two next week. And we will see some compromise on that $3.5 trillion part of it, and we'll see the infrastructure bill go through. And I think that we should see quite a significant impact on the financial markets when those two are passed. And by the way, I want to correct something that I said a few weeks ago. I think I was misled when I said that the Build Back Better plans, as they are written, would add to the national debt. Well, I saw the White House post a claim. I have no reason to doubt President Biden and the White House and Secretary Yellen that this will not add to the national debt, that it will be paid for. And a whole lot of it is going to be paid for by a change in the tax code to make sure that the IRS is collecting the taxes that's due to the citizens. And they promise that this will have no tax impact on anyone making less than $400,000 a year. So I am fully on board with the Build Back Better plan. And I think that we're going to get something, and it's going to have a big impact in the markets.
Well, we may come down from 3.5 trillion to 1.5 if we listen to Manchin, but I don't know how far down they're going to go or where do you think it'll wind up, Jim?
Well, I think maybe around 2.5. They really can't do the things that they want to do in that bill for 1.5 trillion. They can't do it. And one thing they might do is to say, we're going to reduce the time period to 5 years, you know, instead of 10 years. But I think that it'll be more than 1.5, and it will, you know, it will still be significant. Whether it's transformative, you know, remains to be seen. But it's quite the drama, you know, to see that. Hey, I want to shift over to something a little more local. And
2 minutes, 2 minutes.
Okay, to talk about Prop 206, which is a minimum wage bill, a lot of us who are on the permanent early voter list got the Choice is Yours booklet from the city. And I want to call our listeners' attention to the section on Prop 206. This will also really help to revitalize the city, primarily by it would boost what's called the aggregate consumer demand locally. If we raise that minimum wage from the current $12.15 an hour to $15 by 2024, it's not that sudden. It's gradual. It'll go to $13 in April. It would provide more purchasing power for workers in the city. It would help to alleviate this structural poverty that we have in the city, which just whatever cycle, economic cycle we have, it's stuck at over 20%.
By the way,
go ahead.
I've got about a minute. I want people to realize they can call you at 623-3646. You protect people and their money, and then obviously try your hardest to make people money with their money, and you are enormously successful doing that. And I want people to realize that we depend on you for an overview of our financial situation, and a lot of people depend on you for their livelihood. And I want people to call you at 623-3646 or go to jimhanleyllc.com for one of the best websites in America. We're about out of time, Jim. I apologize for the brevity, but I assume Biden's going to get something done in the next 30 days. I guess we'll find out. Good to talk with you, Jim. Hope you have a good
weekend.
Thanks,
John.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks, Ed Ackerley of the Tucson Business Owners Association. And thanks, Sam Stone, running for city council in Phoenix, and Jim Hanley, our financial guru. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum, the most talked to, talked about, and listened to talk show weekends in all of Arizona, now in our 32nd year of continuous political talk. Very quickly, a personal note. I have a PT Cruiser. I love this little car. It takes me everywhere I need to go. Air conditioner goes out. Temperature gauge climbs to we're all going to die. I called AAA. They rushed the car to Perfection Auto Works Wednesday. Get a call on Thursday. Mike Emery says, your car's ready. I went, really? He says, yes. I said, the cost? He said, it's the estimate. Just what we told you. Didn't have time to detail the car because we wanted to get it back to you as quickly as possible. That's service. I mean, who does that? What auto repair place does that? That's why we're so proud to have Perfection Auto Works as our prime sponsor.
Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650. That's 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com.